Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For Disney fans, the world may seem just a little smaller today. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today we remember the late songwriter Robert B. Sherman. We'll also get a visit from multiple Grammy Award-winning singer Roberta Flack. She's got a new album of Beatles songs. Coincidentally, the decade of the Beatles was also the decade of the Sherman Brothers. Robert Sherman, who died yesterday at 86, wrote this song, which has become a kind of anthem of Disney worlds and Disneylands everywhere, with his brother Richard. The two of them also wrote songs for a slew of hit Disney animated films. They wrote pop songs and more. And Jeff Spurgeon from our sister station WQXR joins me in the studio for a quick look back at the career of the Sherman Brothers. And Jeff, you know, they had a huge influence around the same time as the Beatles.
That's an extraordinary coincidence. I hope it's nothing more than a coincidence, but maybe it is two sides of America in the 1960s. It's a fascinating idea to look at it from that standpoint, because when you consider the movies that the Sherman Brothers made and the songs that they wrote for them, which are chiefly, if it were nothing more than Mary Poppins, actually,
right,
it would be
right.
enough. And, of course, It's a Small World. That is America at its sweetest and most innocent.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's not youth culture. It's child culture. It's the world of childhood. And the Beatles are, of course, one of the greatest expressions of America's youth culture and the creation of a youth-focused culture that didn't exist really in America at all before that. So it's extraordinary that these two phenomena,
mm-hmm.
the Beatles and the Sherman Brothers, occurred at the same time.
Of course, everybody knows the name the Beatles, but the Sherman Brothers worked kind of, they literally were behind the scenes.
Well, if you think about Disney, it took him a long time to give credit to all the people. If you watch the original Disney, the animated films that we all know, the credits are not very long on the end.
Yeah.
There aren't a lot of people credited. And so you're right, the Sherman Brothers seemed to be content, at least, to work in the background.
But they had a brief, you know, history in the pop song world, which is how they came to Disney's attention. What strikes me is how much of their music sort of looks to their classical training and especially to jazz, you know, like 1940s, 50s jazz. They'd have people like Louis Prima come in and sing their songs.
That's right, because he was in The Jungle Book
mm-hmm.
and was the original singer of, what was it?
The Monkey Song?
Yes.
I Want to Be Like You.
Let's,
that's right. This is the late Robert B. Sherman and his brother Richard.
I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of walking around. Oh, ooby-doo,
ooby-doo.
I want to be like you.
Hop-dee-ooby-doo.
I want to walk like you.
Cheep.
Talk like you.
Choo-choo. Weepy-dee-bee-doo.
You'll see it's true.
Shoo-bee-dee-doo.
An ape like me.
Scooby-dooby-dooby.
Can learn to be human too.
Richard and Robert Sherman, the Sherman Brothers, wrote I Want to Be Like You, subtitled The Monkey Song for the Disney film Jungle Book. Jeff Spurgeon with me, remembering the late Robert B. Sherman, half of the Sherman Brothers.
I'm not sure there's anything that Louis Prima couldn't sing and turn into his own sound, though,
mm-hmm.
really, because he was just that skilled. I tell you, though, that really it's going to be hard to even keep that song in my head because It's a Small World started off the show, John, and it's going to be a couple of nights' sleep before that leaves me completely.
You know, it's not just, as you were saying before, that it was the music of our youth when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
When my kids were little kids, all these movies were coming out on VHS or DVD.
Yeah, right.
And so, you know, there's a whole other generation of Americans who've grown up with these same songs.
Sad to say, It's a Small World will probably never leave us completely.
Now, we were talking before about, you know, this kind of coincidence that the Sherman Brothers songs were, you know, sort of impacting our collective consciousness at the same time as mm-hmm. the Beatles. Mm-hmm. They seem to have been, the Sherman Brothers, aware of the Beatles, aware of Sgt. Pepper, aware of psychedelia, because that comes out
in
you're kidding.
In places here and there.
Wow. Now, I have to say, had not occurred to me. So if you have examples to illustrate that.
Have you never heard the Heffalumps and Woozles song from Winnie the Pooh?
You'll have to lay it on me.
Oh, my goodness. Listen to this from the Sherman Brothers.
They're black, they're brown, they're up,
they're down,
they're in,
they're out,
they're all above,
they're far,
they're near,
they're gone,
they're there,
they're quick and slick,
they're insincere.
Beware, beware, be a very wary bear. A heffalump or woozle is very confusal. A heffalump or woozle's very sly.
Sly, sly!
They come in ones and twosles, but if they so choosels, before your eyes you'll see them multiply.
Why?
They're extraordinary, so better be wary, because they come in every shape and size.
Size, size.
If money's what you covet, you'll find that they love it, because they'll guzzle up the thing.
Jeff Spurgeon,
you
are you convinced?
I am persuaded, though I hear some echoes too of Pink Elephants on Parade from Dumbo from
absolutely
a couple of decades before. So the Disney line plays through there, but you're absolutely right. Many experiences of the pharmaceutical sort could be accompanied by Heffalumps and Woozles. I think there's no question.
But it's actually part of the Sherman Brothers music for Winnie the Pooh. And I don't want to belabor the point, but there is another connection between the Sherman Brothers and at least one of the Beatles. Listen closely to this medley.
It's as lucky as lucky can be. Chim-chim-a-dee, chim-chim-a-dee, chim-chim-a-dee. Good luck, we're above. When I shake hands with you,
Winnie the Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, chubby little cubby all stuffed with fluff. He's Winnie the Pooh,
Winnie the Pooh,
really, really silly old bear.
Oh, you pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang, we love you. And our pretty chitty bang bang, chitty chitty bang bang wants us to.
You're 16. Beautiful, and you're
mine.
Everybody wants to be a cat, because a cat's the only cat who knows.
Some more of the songs of the Sherman Brothers. The late Robert B. Sherman passed away, according to the New York Times, yesterday, although I'm also hearing that it might have actually been on Monday. He was in London, so maybe there's a time difference. Connection.
Well, one of the interesting things in the obituary in the Times that I did not know, and apparently most people didn't know, was that the two brothers did not get along for a half century.
Mm-hmm.
These guys who brought all of this family music that we all experienced together in those movies, where, well, I was young enough to still go to the drive-in with my mm-hmm. parents. I think that's where I saw Mary Poppins, actually. So it was
Me
a
too.
Family experience. And yet these guys, whatever it was that put them together in their family, did not work for them. They didn't talk to each other and maintained a professional facade for years, telling people that, yes, we're the happy Disney-employed Sherman Brothers songwriting team, and they just didn't even have a relationship for decades.
Well, we heard Chim Chim Tree, which won an Oscar for them for
That's
Best
right.
Song from Mary Poppins, Winnie the Pooh theme, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang from that movie. You're 16, You're Beautiful in Your Mind, which was a top 40 hit for a couple of people, including Ringo Starr of the Beatles, and Everybody Wants to Be a Cat. Lasting impact of the Sherman Brothers?
Oh, I don't think that there's any question that their music will last forever, because the appeal of those movies, honestly, I can't imagine when that appeal will disappear. It's about childhood, it's about magic, and it's about songs that you can learn to sing. Super Fragicale, I can't even say it anymore.
You can't even say it, but you're going
to
sing it.
It probably had to do with my experience with Heffalumps and Woozles as a youth. But those songs are going to last forever.
Robert B. Sherman, half of the Sherman Brothers, and he passed away at the age of 86. Jeff Spurgeon from our sister station, WQXR. Jeff, thanks for joining us.
Delighted to.
This is Soundcheck.
Just a dream away. Man has a dream, and that's the start. He follows his dream with mind and heart. When it becomes a reality, it's a dream come true for you and me. So there's
another anthem from the 1964 World's Fair here in New York from the Sherman Brothers. Up next, Roberta Flack joins us to talk about her new album of Beatles songs. This is Soundcheck.
comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. In my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. By 1971, the Beatles' long and winding road had come to an end, but the journey had just begun for Roberta Flack. She would go on to win Grammys for her number one hits like The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face and Killing Me Softly. Well, now, Roberta Flack has circled back to the soundtrack of her early days with a new album of Beatles songs. It's called Let It Be, Roberta. Joining me in the Soundcheck studio is Roberta Flack.
Hi, John.
Welcome.
Wow, what an intro.
Yeah, well, it's, you know.
And
this
it's
is,
all true.
It's kind of a coming together of,
you
know,
great.
Two major. There was a kind of changing of the guard around 1970, 71.
You know, I hate to think of it as a changing of the guard, but there certainly was. Music began to evolve, shall we say. And in came a bunch of piano players, songwriters. You had Elton. Elton and I were actually in the studio at the same time, around the same time, mm-hmm. Atlantic Studios. Not that he was recording for Atlantic, but he was there.
Stevie Wonder,
you know, Donny Hathaway, mm-hmm. and like people who play keyboard and sing.
Yeah.
And so that happened to be the most pronounced point of evolution in music in the early 70s, rather.
So the Beatles, their run had come to an end. How important were...
I don't like to hear you say that.
Well...
What do you mean, precisely?
What I mean is the Beatles as a group broke up and went their separate ways.
That's very true.
Yeah. So as a band,
yes.
You know, as the Fab Four.
A musical unit.
Right. They come to an end. They go their separate ways. Of course,
yes.
The songs live on.
Oh, of course. Okay.
And my question to you is, how important were these songs to you 40 years ago?
Very. Very. I mean, when I heard Let It Be, I'm not Catholic, you know,
mm-hmm.
but of course... the reference to Mother Mary comes to me, you know, resounded very clearly in my head, and I immediately put the video in my mind that, you know, that at that point the line was referring to Mary, Mother of Jesus, and it was not an effort on my part to having been brought up in a very serious, highly charged Black Methodist Church in Green Valley, Virginia, to, you know, make sense of that musically so that I could sing Mother Mary Comes to Me without, you know, stumbling over it or feeling mm-hmm. like I had to change it or something. I just feel that, you know, when I heard these songs, when I heard the songs, all of the songs, you know, attach themselves to me, just as they did the entire universe, you know. I remember people singing, I Want to Hold Your Hand. And as a music teacher and a musician, I thought that melody, I want to hold, was very, it's almost simplistic. Now, mm-hmm. for those who are listening, I'm not saying simple as in not smart. All of what the Beatles have done represents smartness, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of musical composition. But I just thought, you know, okay, so this is for, who is this song aimed at? And I thought maybe, you know, non-Black teenage girls, you know, who were following them around screaming. Anyway, I just learned as a musician and as a performer myself, and particularly as a teacher, because my young students wanted to sing, I want to hold
sure.
you. And none of them fit the profile of the young kids who were, the young girls who were following the Beatles, but they still wanted to sing that song, and they wanted to sing Let It Be, and all of the early songs from their earlier albums, you know, which were so popular around the world. Everybody wanted to sing, and that included me.
And as a music teacher, I mean, what could be better than your kids wanting to get involved?
That's right, because my theory about music, teaching music, oh boy, it's so pertinent today, too, because all of the artists who are extremely successful and very, very wealthy, we might add, are not necessarily trained musicians, mm-hmm. John. They haven't studied anything except how to make a good record, how to write something that affects people deeply and makes them want to buy, you know, a CD, an MP3, download it on Spotify.
Or it makes them want to sing along or dance along.
Yeah, yeah. There are very, very few Lady Gagas. Lady Gaga I met at the 52nd Grammy Awards business in California and got to talk to her long enough to know that she's extremely trained.
Mm-hmm, right.
Well trained.
Right.
You know, classically. And can write anything, but very, very smart. And, of course, that's what happens with teaching music. Even today, I imagine, though I'm not teaching today, but when I was teaching, I had to find strong motivation to get the kids to learn, for instance, the national anthem. In the seventh grade, the book said, teach seventh grade students the national anthem. And a lot of these kids didn't want to do that. They wanted to sing James Brown or Ray Charles or, you know, Stop in the Name of Love.
Nothing wrong with any of that.
No, you know. But the point was, I started there and got them right back to, you know, the beauty of a song, mm-hmm. how a song is written and how it should be sung and what about what you feel? Do you feel anything? You know, so we learned, and we eventually got to sing the national anthem.
Well, let me turn that back on you. We're speaking with Roberta Flack. Her album's called Let It Be Roberta. Roberta Flack sings the Beatles. You are known as a great singer of ballads, and, you know, this record is full of a number of the Beatles' ballads, but you wanted to sing Come Together.
I did.
So what is it about that song that made you want to sing along?
Well, my school teacher instinct came out. I first did it. I have a group, John, called the Real, R-E-A-L, Artist Symposium. And in my mind, a symposium would be a gathering of highly intelligent, in this instance, musical people, talented people. And most of them are students from Berkeley or other schools of music, and who send me notes or send me a message through somebody saying, you know, listen, I want to work with you. I can write for symphonies. I can arrange for this. I can do what Donnie did.
I sound like Donnie.
Mm-hmm. I sound like Peebo. Give me a chance.
Peebo Bryson.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so I have, you know, communicated and brought a lot of these young people into my little circle, a small musical circle. And we have the symposium, and we started to do songs for our very first album, and I just decided to do Come Together because I added a part at the part of the song where I say people all over the world and change keys. My mind had this brilliant idea. It wasn't very, very original. I think somebody else has done it with kids from all of the nations of the world. But I had this brilliant idea to get kids from all of the nations of the world waving their flags saying, people all over the world, you know, come on. And so that come on, come from come together, took on a different meaning. It wasn't like we're going to come together even as lovers, you and I, or we're going to come together as anything. It's not two people. It's for the whole entire universe. And knowing John, as I had a chance to do, because you probably know that I lived right across the hall from him.
Right. And you still live in the Dakota, right?
I still live there, and Yoko does, and Sean comes by, and it's very, very friendly. I just wanted very much to do that song, and I love the way John sounds singing the song. Mm-hmm. And I was inspired to do it. I thought, I don't have to sound like Tina Turner. I've heard Tina do it. I've heard several other people who have wonderful, you know, hard rock voices, women included. And I thought, I don't have to sound like that. I can get this point across that I'm feeling really deep in my heart about the world coming together. Because as I say on part of the video that I do to talk about the album on iTunes and Amazon, it's kind of scary what's happening in the world. So I think we better come together.
Let's hear a little bit. This is Roberta Flack, my guest on Soundcheck, from her album Let It Be Roberta and Come Together.
He come, old flat up, he come, grooving up slowly. He got juju eyeballs, he won. Holy roller, he got hair down to his knees.
joker, he just do what he please. Yeah.
Roberta Flack singing The Beatles' Come Together. It's from her new album called Let It Be Roberta. And in a moment, we'll continue our conversation with Roberta Flack and hear more of her covers of the songs of the Beatles. You're listening to Soundcheck.
You know me. One thing I can tell you is you got to be free. Come together right now over me. To be here, there, and everywhere.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we're talking about the music of the Beatles today with singer Roberta Flack. Her latest album is called Let It Be Roberta, and it includes lots of Beatles songs, including this recording of the Beatles' Here, There, and Everywhere, which, Roberta, you recorded in Carnegie Hall in 1972.
That was quite a moment for me.
What was happening in your career then?
I was just starting, you know, I had been working at a club in Washington, D.C., Mr. Henry's, and
doing Bill, what? What kind of stuff were you singing back
I
in your club days?
I was singing Here, There, and Everywhere. And
oh, really?
Everything. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a little jazz trio. I wouldn't call it a jazz trio. I don't like titles. Because I would sing everything. I'd sing a folk song. As a matter of fact, that's how I got the first time ever I saw your face. It's a folk song, as most people probably know by now.
Ewan McCall, right?
Ewan McCall, written for his wife, Peggy Seeger.
Right.
Who, when he met her and saw her and wrote, the first time I ever saw your face, was married to someone else at the time. Did you know that?
That does ring a bell,
and
yeah.
They were all there. And he's just, that's just such a romantic story. But at any rate, yeah, I was
singing. Well, not for the first husband.
Who, no.
Sort of gets cast by the side of the road as this juggernaut song heads on down the highway.
I'd like to think that it was meant to be. I mean, I'm a romantic at heart, and I think that what will be, que sera, you know.
Right.
But anyway, I was playing, you know, a lot of Beatles songs. The song Here, There, and Everywhere, which is on the album, the Let It Be Roberta album, is very special for me because it's just myself and a bass player, upright bass player and drummer. And that's how I used to work at Mr. Henry's. And I did whatever I wanted to do. A lot of ballads, you know, because I was a keyboard player who needed to close my eyes for some reason, you know, and you know if you're going to play for yourself and sing, you need to do what Elton does, which is look at the keys for the most part, you know. And I couldn't do that. I had to get into the song because I was not comfortable as a singer at that point in my career. Even though I did sing a lot in church, did sing a lot as a school teacher, but that was for participation or demonstration purposes, not solo, spotlight, camera, you know, action. And so I had to get my act together, so to speak, and I chose songs that were easy for me. Here, There, and Everywhere was easy. The thing that I like about this appearance at Carnegie Hall is that it was my first appearance at Carnegie Hall, and I had trained as a student of classical piano repertoire. And, I mean, one of the goals that you have studying, you know, 24 Chopin etudes or, several Bach partitas and 2- and 3-part interventions is that you'll get a chance to play this somewhere. Now, this is not pop music. We're not talking about it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing. We're talking about, you know, Bach. We're talking about fugues. We're talking about...
And we're talking about Carnegie Hall.
Yes.
How do you get to Carnegie
Hall?
How
do you get to Carnegie Hall? You practice, practice, practice. And that's what I did. So by the time I got the invitation to play Carnegie Hall, I had done my first album. and I think my second one, because we did Reverend Lee on that concert as well, and it was very successful. Donnie was there, and he conducted the orchestra. And
again, that's Donnie Hathaway.
Played, yes.
But we're speaking with Roberta Flack. You mentioned the Ewan McCall song, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. Let's just remind listeners of a little bit of the classic sound of Roberta Flack.
First time ever I saw your face, I thought the sun rose in your
Roberta Flack, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. You recorded that back in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
It was a slow burn. It didn't really become a hit for another couple
of years. No, it didn't. As a matter of fact, my then producer Joel Dorn, God rest his soul, said, "Ro, can you pick up the tempo a little bit?" And I looked over at my bass player, who was Ron Carter, the fabulous Ron Carter, jazz
really?
Bassist. And, you know, he didn't want to get involved, but he very carefully shook his head like, and I said, "No, I don't want to change it."
For radio listeners, that was a shake of the head from side to side, as in no.
Right, but it, a very slow, not so obvious shake of the head.
Ron's been on the show. I could see Ron Carter doing
that. Yeah, no, he was very helpful, and his wife and I had gone to school together, Howard University, so, you know, I knew him, and I trusted him as a musician and as a friend. And so I said very boldly to Joel Dorn, "No, I'm not going to change the tempo. That's the way it's supposed to go." He said, "Ro, it will never get heard on the radio." I said, "I don't care." And so when I said that, Ron kind of frowned a little bit, because I'm not supposed to say I don't care. I said, "I don't care." And he said, "Okay." And so, of course, they didn't release it as a single. But I might say, John, that lots of people who did hear it sort of as, you know, on the album, and some DJs were playing it anyway on the radio, though it was 5 minutes and 40 seconds long, I think.
An eternity in pop radio.
Eternity. But some DJs were playing it, and so it got to be heard. And that's how, you want to tell the rest of the story?
Is that how Clint Eastwood heard it?
That's how Clint Eastwood heard it. He says he was driving down the L.A. freeway, and he heard it, you know, on a public radio station, I guess, or jazz station. And that he found himself almost off the road, you know, because he loved the song and loved the way I had done it. And he called me in Virginia. And I don't make light of this, because I consider it one of the high points of my life, period, and certainly of my career. "Roberta, it's Clint."
Did you know, did he really say, "It's Clint"?
Yeah.
Not Clint Eastwood?
No, he said, "It's Clint."
And
yeah,
knew
because
who it was.
I knew that he was going to call. The people
okay.
from Atlantic
All
had
right.
called me and gotten me alerted and alarmed and ready. And I said, "Hi, how are you, Mr. Eastwood?" He said, "You can call me Clint." He said, "I love the song." I'll talk in my own voice. He said, "I love the song, First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And I'm doing a movie where this person who's not too mentally
stable
decides that she's going to chase down the disc jockey. She has a thing for him, and she chases him down and threatens to kill him and almost does. And
she said, loves him so.
Yeah, but he said there's only one point in the movie where, you know, they are walking, and he said, "I'm going to do like a slow motion thing, and I'm going to play your song." I said, "You're going to play all of the song?" He said, "Yes." So I said, "Well, let me at least take out the intro, which is just the piano part." Mm-hmm. He said, no, "I want all that." I said, "Okay, then let me do it again, record it again, and pick up the tempo a little bit." He said, "No, I want it just like that." And I have him to thank for that. And he really meant that. I saw him recently, John, on a cable show, a cable jazz show, and he was talking about, I think they had him on to list the greatest jazz people that he admired in his life and things like that. Because, you know, he did that movie of Charlie Parker.
Right, and he's a big jazz fan.
Yeah, and he plays keyboards and writes, too.
Right.
The movie Sudden Impact has a song at the end of it called This Side of Forever, which he wrote for me to sing.
Oh.
And it's really an interesting relationship. But anyway, Clint loves the song. Clearly his loving the song so much had a lot to do with the success.
And so it appears in the film called Play Misty for Me, a film that strikes terror into the hearts of radio hosts, DJs, everywhere.
I know, I'm talking to you like this is no big deal. But yes, I'm sure it does.
Roberta Flack is with us on Soundcheck today. The Grammy Award-winning singer has a new album out called Let It Be Roberta. Roberta Flack sings the Beatles. And there are a number of kind of surprising arrangements. I mean, who sort of made the call? There are a couple of things that
go to neo-soul
or R&B sounds.
Yeah, I've been working on the album for almost 5 years. And the songs, all of the songs, have undergone many changes, which I don't find anything wrong with.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that I had written one, you know, and then I would have a clear idea in my head, bam, it's supposed to be like this. You know, and I would, that's what, you know, I could tell you happened. But when I started doing the songs, I my first approach was more in keeping with, you know, the traditional sound of the songs. And then I thought, but that's not what I feel when I say, if I give my heart to you, you must be da 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 dee da, and that's not what he wrote, you know. So I wanted to change it, you know, and make it what I wanted to be. So I had to find someone. I found Sherrod Barnes, who has worked with Beyonce and Angie Stone, and is a brilliant musician, singer-songwriter himself, who I hope to return the favor, turn the tables on, and produce. At one point in the near future. But he's all over this album. He sings. And when I said, you know, I want to change this, he would come in with something. At first, I was a little skeptical. You know, I thought, oh, I don't know, drum sounds. I'm used to drums. And he said, well, we can put drums on it. So, in fact, we did on Let It Be. We brought in a drummer, the fabulous drummer Charlie Drayton, and he's also on George Harrison's song, Isn't It a Pity?
Yeah.
And but, you know, I thought, okay, I can live with this. I don't know what I'm kvetching about. This is how records sound on the radio in 2012.
Right.
And there's no point in putting a record out if it's not going to be heard. I'm not putting it out for
history. A vanity project.
No,
or,
no, not at all. Certainly not those pennies they're charging me. That's not vanity at all.
The album is called Let It Be Roberta. Roberta Flack sings the Beatles. Here's a little bit of The Long and Winding Road. And Roberta, it has really been a pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck. Congratulations.
Over, is it?
Well, the show never really ends, but this particular portion is.
Thank you, John. It was my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Roberta Flack with us on Soundcheck.